Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. I feel very, very happy indeed to be sitting across the table today from two musical colleagues here in the community. One of them, a faculty colleague of mine at Carthage, Dr. Peter Dene, and the other, Dr. James Kinchin, who is the director of choral activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And on a couple of previous happy occasions, Carthage and Parkside have been partners, and it has a lot to do with these two gentlemen and their love of collaboration. And yet another collaboration is going to be occurring this coming Sunday afternoon, a concert called Together in Song, which will feature not only a collaboration between choirs of Parkside and Carthage, but from two other colleges in the area as well. So it's a foursome that is going to be featured on Sunday afternoon's concert. And at the heart of Sunday afternoon's concert, the music of one of our most skilled and admired contemporary composers of choral music, Abby Battinas. And we're going to be a little bit later in the hour playing an excerpt from an interview which I recorded with Abby Battinas a year or two ago when she was in the area.
Spring, actually.
Oh, was it that recent?
Yes.
Time flies when you're having fun, or we just don't even keep track. But anyway, we're going to share a little bit of that that previous conversation a little bit later in this hour. But in the meantime, a warm welcome to Dr. Peter Dene and Dr.
Thank
James
you.
Kinchin. Both, good to have both of you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great to have you here. I just said something about how the two of you are not strangers to collaboration, not strangers to each other, but maybe you can give us a quick thumbnail sketch of just what the cooperation and collaboration has been, I mean, especially between the two of you.
Several years ago, I believe that James and I started talking about doing something together, and I think part of it came out of that we oftentimes ran into each other in a place other than Kenosha at some conference or something and say we never see each other when we're in our own town. And so we spent some more time doing that and decided to approach Fine Arts at First to see if they would, because we wanted to have a community concert at a site that was in the community, and so they welcomed us there, and had, I think this will be our third time doing this concert, and this is kind of this concert. Last time we did it, we did a joint piece by the composer Jocelyn Hagen, who actually was the roommate of Abby Battinas when they were in college. And this concert is kind of a combination of two things that I've been doing, one with James and then these other two conductors, Lisa Fredenberg from Aurora University and Paul Laprade from Rock Valley. Last year, we all got together and performed the music of Gwyneth Walker with Gwyneth Walker in attendance. And that was such a successful thing that we wanted to do it again. And so we brought James on board and are doing it here in Kenosha. So that's kind of the history of this.
Very good. On the surface, just at a first glance, it seems like it's an entirely wonderful idea to collaborate with choirs from other colleges. But are there any logistical headaches that are involved in getting your lives and your calendars to sort of be in sync and also to make a special project like this sort of fit into what I suspect is already a busy calendar of other things? I mean, how tricky is it to pull off something like this?
Well, Peter, has sort of taken the lead in this, and he can speak to a lot of the logistical details. What I can say is that the thing that often keeps us apart is the fact that we all have our own calendars, our own priorities. We are sort of siloed, if I can use that term, into sort of the way that we do things and our priorities and programs and all of that. And so then you've got to sort of open that up and make room in order to make collaborations happen, because everybody's sort of got a schedule, a flow to their academic year, to their season, and that sort of thing. And I think that's one of the big challenges, to be able to say, okay, we can do this, and in order to make this happen, we've got to do this, this, or the other thing a little differently at our place.
Right, or not do a thing or two.
Or not do it. Right. But it's worth doing. And so we have sort of done our collaboration, I guess, influenced a lot by the fact that here we are, literally a stone's throw away from each other, and we are two colleagues who have become friends over the years, and so it's such a shame that my students don't get right to have some interaction with their students and vice versa. So yeah, but there are challenges, sure.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think part of the working with James and working with the other two, Lisa and Paul, is that there's a lot of trust that you know, okay, we agree on the date, and then there's really not much conversation that happens until now we're in the week before, and we're, you know, finalizing, okay, what time are we all going to get together? We have these two pieces that we're doing as combined choir. We need to for sure rehearse, so we will only rehearse them on the day of the concert.
Right. Well, and I guess part of the thing you have to trust is that everyone will come prepared,
right,
as prepared as your own ensemble is
right
prepared.
Yeah. There are logistics involved, but most of it is just, you know, picking the date and everybody agreeing that that's when it's going to happen, and then you just trust that all the other things will fall in place. And Jessica DeBoer at Fine Arts at first has been very good at kind of getting what she needs from us doing kind of that. You know, if we were to host it at our own place, then that would be another layer of logistics. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot that goes on at First United Methodist that helps with that as well.
Right. So the concert on Sunday, again, it's called Together in Song. It will be at First United Methodist Church. It's their next in their series, their season called Fine Arts at First. I assume that the concert will feature each group doing things on their own, and then a relatively small amount of the program will involve all of the choir singing together. Is that, generally speaking, the format?
That's right. There's each choir, I said, could perform up to three or four pieces. And then I laid the ground rules. I made and that there had to be at least one piece that they did that was Abby's. And so all of us are doing at least one. I think Paul is actually bringing two choirs, and one of his choirs is performing two of her pieces.
Okay.
And then we have two pieces that we're doing together as a combined chorus, and those are rounds. Mm. One thing that Abby is known for is writing rounds, and they're very creative, and they're not your typical
row.
Yeah, exactly. and so we're doing two of those together, and one of them will actually involve the audience as well. They'll be able to join in at some point with the round. Those are the two combined pieces. Everybody else is doing at least two other pieces of Abby's, and she will throughout the concert stand up and speak about her compositions her motivation for writing some of the pieces. I don't think she'll talk about all of them, but many of them.
Right. It occurs to me that this reminds me, the logistics of it, a little bit of, for instance, Carthage's own Christmas festival, and in a sense, Dr. Kinchin's various concerts around the holidays would be maybe a similar kind of thing. But especially at Carthage, where you're talking about several different choral directors, and each group does their own thing and maybe combine at the end. But you could very easily have a situation where the overall program ends up not being particularly well balanced, or you might even have two different choirs wanting to do the same thing, or whatever. I mean, when everybody is sort of conceiving their own piece of the pie in their own little kitchen, and then you sort of hope that what results is a beautifully varied and balanced program. It miraculously seems to work out that way with the Carthage Christmas Festival, but it's not like we sit down around a table and say, I'm singing Handel, so you shouldn't sing Handel or whatever. Right. It just seems like there's enough music out there, and we have the good sense to kind of find a balance. But how does that happen accidentally in this kind of a project?
I think it's this whole thing of trust again. I mean, the same thing happens at Carthage that I as a festival director, trust that everybody's going to choose, and I again lay down some ground rules about this is the theme and this is what you should be thinking about. But then, so Jessica at United Methodist and I sat down yesterday and went through what everybody had submitted, and then looking at the pieces that were there, came up with an order that kind of created an arc of music. So there's five choirs, and there's going to be variety just in the choirs, size, women's choir, mixed choir, all of that, and then variety in the music that they pick. So you can kind of create an interest. We have a theme of Abby's music, and then this kind of diversity of things that happen based on what people like James select. I wanted to say one other thing that, James was just recently stepped down as the president of our North Central ACDA, and he wrote a lot about collaboration while he was there as president. And one of the things he wrote about was actually our collaboration here in Kenosha, and that was a really special thing that I think that he tried to bring to our division as well.
Right. I mean, maybe that can be an inspiration for others to engage in this. Dr. Kinchin, as we talked here on the morning show a few weeks ago, you are just back from a trip to India with some of your singers. So I suppose that throws a little wrinkle into how a fall unfolds when a little trip to a place like India is thrown into the mix. So are you going to... Are they going to do some of the music from that same program?
Well, actually, that's a good question. Actually, no. And talking about our trip to India, I smiled a little bit when Peter was talking about trust, because that was a period of time where I was definitely very deeply in the India hole. And I think he had to sort of rely on the fact that I said, you know, James said he'd do it, and you know, everything will be fine. But I was really, really very focused on getting that going. We're actually sort of transitional coming out of that trip, so we won't be doing anything that we did there. And instead, our program will be one that will, I think, be suitable for, appropriate for the singers that we'll bring, which I think everybody wants to do. In our case, we will do the plain song, Ave Maria, and follow that immediately with the lovely motet by the late Renaissance composer Tomás Luis da Vitoria. And we will also do a very nice setting of the German text, For God So Loved the World, that he gave his only begotten son, by Georg Philipp Telemann. The piece that we've chosen to do of Abby's is one that we've begun to really love and is continuing to take on new expressive dimensions for us. It is Blessed Be the Lord, My Rock. So I didn't know the piece before we engaged this project, but I found out that it's a piece that she wrote the day after the 9/11 catastrophe in New York,
you know. Wow.
And it was her response as a musician, as an artist, and as a human being to something awful that had happened, and trying to connect somehow with this tragedy and all the people who had suffered the loss of life, the loved ones who lost, the people who lost loved ones and so forth, with the faith in God and the constancy of the presence of God. Yes. And what comes out of that is this wonderful piece that is richly linear and at the same time very expressive of the text. It's to express assurance and faith in God. It's to remind all of us how transient and how temporal we are. There's one line that really strikes me. It says, "We are like breath."
Wow.
And yet at the end, there is the determination not to despair, but I will sing a new song to God.
Wow.
And that's the offering of hers that we are bringing.
And who is we exactly? Which of your groups are you bringing to this conference?
This is Voices of Parkside, my chamber group.
Very good. Yeah. Dr. Dene, how about your wonderful women's ensemble? And ahead of talking about that, we should mention a really wonderful honor that your group was given not all that long ago.
Yeah, and I just heard another. I just learned yesterday that actually James is going to be connected to that as well. So my women's choir was notified over the summer that we are invited to be part of the North Central ACDA American Choral Directors Association division meeting. We were invited to participate in the music and worship event. And I just learned yesterday that James is going to be part of that event as well, being a reader.
Oh, cool.
For that event. So we're traveling to Sioux Falls, South Dakota in February.
so not Orlando and not Los Angeles.
It is the vision. So it was bound to be somewhere up here.
Right. That's where I was born. So I don't appreciate anything slanderous being said about Sioux Falls.
I'm looking forward to seeing this. I've never been there. So we're looking forward to it.
And I want to interject and say, so that listeners will understand, that the opportunity to perform for the North Central Division, which encompasses our state, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, and the Dakotas, is a really coveted and rare opportunity, and one that's much sought after. Mm-hmm. And I am just so proud of Peter and his singers the opportunity that they have been extended to come and to share with peers, with a room full of ears.
I remind them of that all the time.
I bet. So coming up on Sunday then, what is your women's ensemble planning to sing?
So we're singing a piece called Here by Joan Shimko, as I think how she pronounces it. And it's one of my favorite pieces that I've got several that we performed that she wrote, but it's about fall. The text is from a poet, Wendell Berry. What I say, it's about fall, but it's not really, it's a metaphor of life and passing and things like that. But it's a really beautiful, piece of music with great words. And then we're singing a piece, by Stephen Paulus, and I was trying to find, we're seeing three pieces, and the third piece is Abby's, and I was trying to find a piece that wasn't too long that kind of would lead us into her piece, and this is by the same poet, Michael Dennis Brown, who's a Minnesota, he's born in Ireland, but taught at the University of Minnesota with poetry, and it's a short piece from a longer work by Stephen Paulus. And it's called Tree of Two Birds. And again, it's a metaphor, nature metaphor, about friendship and friendship even when people are gone. And so that leads into the Abby Bettina's piece, The Blessing of Cranes, this is a piece we sang in the spring. We premiered we were part of a consortium of over 30 women's choirs that commissioned three works for women's choir, and as far as I and Abby know, we're still the only choir that's performed it. It's a very, when I gave it to the women, I said, this is the hardest piece we've ever done.
Wow. What is its title again?
A Blessing of Cranes.
All right. And we'll hear a little excerpt from it and hear her talking about it shortly.
But I think what James said about his description of the piece that they're doing is the same for, and I think it's just this year in one of the classes I'm teaching, we were talking about composition and what makes a composition great, And it really is this sense of every time you approach it, every time you either listen to it or perform it, that you learn something different, or you hear something different, or you experience something different. And I think that that's the same. That's how I see the genius in her music, but it's also this kind of beauty that's her own voice. And I don't think her pieces sounded all alike, but there's something about them that is so different and new and exciting. And so we're doing a Blessing of Cranes. So if you came to our concert in the spring, we're doing it again. There's a couple of unique kind of vocal effects that happen. Instead of humming, we're making this kind of sound that was intended to, kind of a sound. And actually, when we performed it in the spring, they covered their noses too and it made it more nasal. But we have a lot of freshmen in the choir, so they weren't ready to sing without the music. So there was no way to cover noses. And then there's a closing to this kind of NG sound and wings. And the song, like James's, what James is more immediate of 9/11. This is a reflection on the 50th anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki, and the paper cranes that were folded. I wish I could tell you the complete story, but I can't. But
she gets into that, I think, a little bit in the excerpt that we'll hear. So
one thing that I can tell you that I've talked to her since then is she's become. So by singing this song, you are in essence folding a paper crane because of it's called serial music. She uses a formula for figuring out how she's going to create the melodies and the harmonies, and she's become fascinated with that and now is working on a round that uses mathematical connections of the pitches and things like that. So those are the two that we're doing, and the other choirs are, there's three or four other pieces that are being performed by choirs too.
And then you said two of her rounds are going to be performed by all four groups together.
Yeah. Lumen. Wow. One's called Lumen. It's in Latin, and the other is Morning Round.
Dr. Kinchin, what is it that you find yourself, why do you find yourself so drawn to her music? How does it speak to you?
Well, you know, I guess if I may take a little license, I will say that I was initially attracted to her music at all because of her great uncle's music, Alfred Burt. The Alfred Burt carols have become an American institution, and I've known them from at least the beginning of my choral experiences. And so as I did some research a few years ago, I learned of Abby, didn't know of Abby at all, learned of her, learned that she was continuing that tradition and composing additional pieces of her own. And so I programmed, in fact, and this is maybe about 4 years ago or so, a couple of her new carols. Run Toboggan Run was one.
Oh.
And He Might Have Come on Clouds of Heaven was another one with my community choir in Milwaukee. And they very much enjoyed singing them. And that was an enhancement to our program. And I was very impressed with her as a fresh voice. And as what I consider to be a very sort of curious and incisive mind. And that to me seems to be, Peter was talking a while ago about there sort of not being necessarily a Bettina style. And to me, that's sort of the connecting, the commonality between the pieces that she does. And you know, you just hear this active mind in whatever she's doing, and this real fresh approach, this real fresh thought that comes through in all of her music. And that's something that I like very much. And yet, with the piece that we're doing for this concert, Blessed Be the Lord, there is more, if you will, of the kind of emotional attachment, if I can say that, that one senses, than perhaps the cerebral piece that wants to look for formulas and ways of converting mathematical metrics to musical sound. But also I should say we were talking about going to the North Central ACDA, that Abby is very active and very visible in North Central, and you go to a convention and you see her there and she's greeting people and she's talking about her compositions, and so we're real happy in that sense to have her as part of the choral community.
Very good. By the way, is she going to be there on Sunday?
She will. Yes,
oh,
she is.
Terrific. Well, let's hear a little bit of her music. This happens to be a piece that's not part of Sunday's program, but nevertheless, I think it's a really distinctive example. It happens to be the piece that she suggested we play at the start of the interview that we did with her a couple of years ago. Or was this already? I guess it was just last spring. So this is a portion of Abby Battinas's piece called To the Evening Star. And this is sung by a group called Vox Humana. Absolutely exquisite music by Abby Battinas. A piece of hers called To the Evening Star.
Yes.
Dr. Dene, you mentioned that one of the pieces that the Women's Ensemble did by her, you told them that's going to be the hardest piece of music you've ever sung. I was just curious from both of you, generally speaking, or is it possible to even say, given what you were saying, Dr. Kinchin, about her wide musical palette, how difficult does her music tend to be? Is it intimidatingly difficult? Is it? And I assume you think it's worth the work, those pieces that are difficult.
This piece, The Blessing of Cranes, is the third or fourth piece that we've done by her. And there are challenges in all of it. And but I think, again, what James was saying is that the students can connect somehow. I mean, there's only so much you can do to sell a piece. And at some point, they have to take ownership of it. And if they do or don't, that's on them. And so they embraced it pretty early on. And I think being honest about the difficulty of it helps, too. I think it's always been worth it. And doing it a second time, it helps you to kind of not have to spend that initial time just kind of figuring it out.
Right.
And there were many, I had to email her, because we, being the premiere of it, I had to email her and say, what do you mean by this? And how are we supposed to do this?
Yeah,
and
no recording and, to yes, turn
right,
to.
Exactly, yeah. And she was very helpful.
Yeah, and you've found this music gratifying and worth what I'm sure is sometimes a lot of effort to master it.
And good music, and I think this is sort of universally true, and I think it's been true across time. always brings its own unique challenges to the performer. Those challenges are not always to be found in the profusion of notes or the complexity of the music, but performers are always challenged to sort of reach beyond themselves to embrace the work of any good composer. And with Abby, that is certainly true. It's been true, for example, the work that I talked about, just the idea of making the line work, because that's one of the things that's central to this piece that we're doing. It's really quite a challenge for any singer, and I think for the young singer particularly. But again, the gratifying, and I very much sat here empathizing with Peter, because a lot of times we start out as leaders, you know, selling a piece and saying to our troops, you know, this is going to be a terrific piece. I think honesty is so important. You've got to work at this. You know, we can make this happen. But at some point, you see the transition, and maybe it's a gradual one, maybe it's a sudden one. It differs from piece to piece, where it becomes their piece, and that's such a great thing, and that's happened for us.
We're going to hear now a little bit from the composer herself. She happens not to be in the room, but from the interview which we did with her back in the spring, an all-too-brief interview, I'm sorry to say, you're going to get a little taste of who Abby Battinas is, and she is indeed a really inspiring person on a whole lot of different levels. So here she is, and this will be a conversation from that interview about one of the pieces that's going to be done on this Sunday afternoon's concert called Together in Song, featuring four different college choirs, including musicians from UW-Parkside and Carthage College. So here's a little bit from composer Abby Battinas. Her music is the featured, the central element of Sunday afternoon's concert. I want to talk for a moment about this work, but just in one particular matter of it. This is something which was commissioned by the 2014 Women's Choir Commission Consortium of the American Choral Directors Association. Sounds like a really interesting commission. Just say a quick word about that.
A kind of a stressful commission. It's kind of a big deal. It is the first time I've written for 37 choirs. This is my first time doing a consortium commission where each choir buys in with a certain fee in order to commission three composers, and I'm one of them for this season. And I believe Carthage Women's Ensemble is the first choir of the 37 to give this piece its premiere.
Wow!
So I thought I'd just drive over from St. Paul and just be there to witness it.
Of course, for the big, big day.
Yeah.
And I should think that one of the great joys you've had is to collaborate with other musicians, with various ensembles of one kind or another. I mean, probably your typical commission is not like this one, which involves sort of all of these different groups, most of which you probably had no direct knowledge of. But under most circumstances, of course, a composer is writing maybe for a conductor or a group that they know something about.
Exactly.
And what a pleasure.
Yeah, and this piece had its own challenges that way because the 37 ensembles are all very different. Some are younger students, some are community women. It's a women's consortium, so they're all treble voices. But I wanted to write something that would be universally interesting and still personal enough that it needs to be said in music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I went to my my friend. I'm so pleased to call him my friend, the poet Michael Dennis Brown. He's the professor emeritus of English at the University of Minnesota. And he was my poetry teacher while I was there studying. And I asked him if he might write me a poem for this particular project.
Hmm. Did you give him a particular topic?
I did. Mm-hmm. I had been working on the idea of something. I guess I won't go into it very much, but I've been working on the idea of three-dimensional sheet music a little bit. One of the first things that one of my counterpoint teachers told me when I was studying was sheet music has two drawbacks. So the first is that it ends at the end of the page. And the second is that it's flat. And music is not flat. Music renders itself in sort of an oral three-dimensional aspect when we hear it. We can hear a pattern that pops out of a texture. We can hear a flute melody, say, over an orchestral sound bed of strings or something like that. And that comes closer to us than something farther away. I think he's right. It's one of the drawbacks of standard sheet music is that we can't see that visually in how it might actually render. I've just been kind of thinking about that a lot for, 15 years
so. Yeah.
And when I realized everything came together at this for this particular project, when I realized that there would be about 1,000 singers singing this piece, I thought, there has been a story I've been wanting to talk about in music, which has to do with 1,000, and that is the story of Sadako and the paper cranes. Do you know this story?
I know something about it, but I bet our listeners don't, or some don't.
When I was young, I had a children's book about it, and we talked about it in school. But I researched it a little more now as an adult and just found it so... I was just so taken with the idea. So many of your listeners probably know it's the 60th anniversary this year of the dropping of the atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. One of the stories that came out of the Hiroshima bomb is this young girl, Sadako Sasaki. She was 2 when the bomb fell. She survived, but she got cancer when she was 12. And that was a direct, she got cancer when she was 12, a direct result of the radiation from the bomb. What she did was one of her friends reminded her in the hospital that of the Japanese legend of if you fold 1,000 origami paper cranes, you could get a wish. And so Sadako sort of set about to find little scraps of paper in the hospital. And she folded, there are different stories, but the one I think is most accurate is she folded 1,300 cranes with her friends and her schoolmates, and she wished for peace, and she wished for her cancer to go away. Something very personal for me.
Yeah, of course.
So I thought I'd write a piece about that.
So tell us about Michael Dennis's Brown's beautiful poem, or maybe you want to read it for us.
I'd love to. So I went to him with this idea of, do you think you could write a poem about the process of folding a piece of paper? And could it be kind of a geometric poem? My favorite style that he taught me in his poetry class, my favorite form is the villanelle.
Okay.
And that's what this is. I'll read it. It's called A Blessing of Cranes. How do we love you more than to shape you? Turning so firmly in the shadows of fingers? How do we love you more than to let you go? Waves of Earth's oceans, waves of our willing hands, creasing and folding, unfolding. How do we love you more than to shape you? Never a thought of thinking, only this weaving, these thousands of wings we make to carry our longing. How do we love you more than to let you go? No trembling before the task, simply this sweetness, freedom from fear, receiving this heartbeat, receiving. How do we love you more than to shape you? Blossoms that shimmer and gather about their branches, returning to earth her peace, her original blessing. How do we love you more than to let you go? Deeper than dream to say, even than singing, releasing the wishes we have, the asking for healing. How do we ever love you more than to shape you? How do we love you more than to let you go?
That's exquisite. and
isn't that?
Yeah, breathtaking.
I think
absolutely
what he
beautiful.
Does so well, and some of your listeners might know his other poems. He did the lyrics for Stephen Paulus's Pilgrim's Hymn, which is quite famous, sung at Ronald Reagan's funeral, and others, The Road Home. But what he does really well, I think, is this sense of universality of imagery and things that we can all understand, these blossoms that shimmer. We've seen that.
Yeah.
And then also the personal, that each one of us, I think, comes to this thinking, I have loved something so much that I had to let it go.
Hmm. The music itself, which I've listened to, is absolutely gorgeous. I want you to say a very quick word about when we take the piece of music in hand, what we find at the very end of it.
What I tried to do was to replicate Sadako's love for this origami art and to bring that into the hands of the singers. So, you know, with choral music, every single person has their own score and they're holding it in their hands usually. And this choir is memorized, which is fantastic. But they get a little piece of that paper anyway. In the back of the score, they can cut out a square and fold it, and I have directions for them to fold their own paper crane at the end of the sheet music so that they can get a sense of what Sadako was going through.
Mm. Love it, love it, love it. This is a gorgeous work. And that is composer Abby Betinas. Her music is going to be featured in a very central way on this Sunday afternoon's concert called Together in Song. And as a matter of fact, the piece that she was discussing there, A Blessing of Cranes, is one of the pieces that will be sung on this concert. Each of the four colleges bringing singers to Sunday afternoon's concert, each will be performing music of Abby Betinas, as will the combined forces, two of her rounds. And as they were saying earlier, the composer Abby Betinas will be on hand for Sunday afternoon's concert at First United Methodist Church. It must be really nice to just hear her voice again. I know it is for me. And just to be reminded of what an amazing human being she is. Right. So very, very vibrant, despite the fact that she's contended with some real difficulty.
Yeah, she was born in 1980, and it has had cancer three times now in her life. And so as a survivor, the last time leukemia and having a transplant and that was successful. It was very great person, beautiful person.
Right. So Sunday afternoon's concert is at 3 o'clock, is that right?
3 o'clock, yes.
3 o'clock at First United Methodist Church, which is the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street. It's a beautiful space for music, and particularly for choral music. And so this concert is free and open to the public, and what a terrific opportunity to hear some superb choral music and to also encounter in person the great Abby Betinas. Gentlemen, the few minutes that are remaining for us, we should talk about the projects that you have coming up that are going to be keeping you and your singers busy now through the end of December. Dr. Kinjan, let's begin with you.
Well, our focus is going to be something that that Peter can relate to, I'm sure. We're doing a Nuzo Sabbath Week, Glenn Burley's wonderful Kwanzaa work with orchestra. And we're doing two performances of it, Saturday, December 5th at 7:30 p.m., Sunday, December 6th at 3:30 p.m., both performances in our incomparable performance space, the Francis Bedford Concert Hall. We would love to have people to come. This music is something that never fails to inspire and uplift people, this will be no exception.
Mm, that's terrific. So the first weekend in December, which is also when you and our other colleagues will be very busy as well at Carthage, yes. Dr. Dene.
Our annual Christmas festival is that same weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I don't know more to say about it. It's similar every year. It's a Carthage's gift to the community for Christmas. And I guess what I can say is, as of yesterday, Saturday is nearly sold out. If you're planning to go, usually once Saturday fills up, then we have about a week before the other 2 days fill up. So,
sure. Maybe mention the theme.
The theme, oh, thank you, is Great Light. All of the ensembles were asked to kind of think about that theme, and at least some portion of their performance will be connected to that theme, and the overall readings and things are related to that. I guess new this year, we often have a combined piece. We have three combined pieces this year. I guess more of this collaboration thing going on, so bringing more challenges to us. One quick thing that I'll add about Abby is that on Monday, so the 16th, She will be doing a presentation that is open to the community at noon at Carthage in the Recital Hall, where two of our voice faculty, Allison Hull and Peg Cleveland, will perform a movement from one of her pieces for solo voice. And then one of our students is going to present his composition, and she's going to talk about composition and the process of composition for about an hour, from noon to 1 or 1:15.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great idea. Well, Dr. Peter Dene, Dr. James Kinchin, it's so great to have you here, and it's great to hear more about the collaborations which you've done in the past, and this next one coming up on Sunday afternoon, Together in Song at First United Methodist Church. Thank you for being here, and very best wishes to you and to all of your talented musicians.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, historian Harlow Giles Unger talking about his latest book, which is a biography of a great American, Henry Clay, who tirelessly served America for the course of 5 decades and was one of the most courageous voices for the abolition of slavery. On Thursday, the monthly visit of the United Environmental Council. On Friday, a British science writer talks about the history of neuroscience in a brand new fascinating book called The Brain. Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Our weather forecast calls for sunny and pleasant conditions today, headed for a high of 57 degrees. It will be clear and cold overnight. Our overnight low will be 38 degrees. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Veterans Day, kind of nasty, actually. The day begins partly cloudy, becomes increasingly cloudy and extremely windy over the afternoon with a 40% chance of afternoon rain and a high of 59 degrees. Cloudy and windy Thursday night, Thursday, I should say, with a 40% chance of rain and a high of 50. And actually, some of that rainfall is expected to bring strong thunderstorms and very heavy rainfall. Scattered flurries in the forecast on Friday. This is W.